CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives for today. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers. And Lee, if you'd like to introduce our sponsors.
Absolutely. Today's show is brought to you by Delaney Consulting LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies, interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney as outstanding and excellent. And also SAP Business by Design, a fully integrated business management software solution designed for small to mid-sized companies that want the benefits of large-scale business applications without the need for a large IT infrastructure.
And today's newsreel comes from CFO Magazine. They have an article that's very, very interesting, So Much for Death by Committee. And this article is referring to the Audit Committee. It details scrutinizing a routine cash management issue is just one of the new items on the top of the Audit Committee's agendas these days. As companies all across industries reassess their risk appetites, their Audit Committees are conducting similar self-evaluations and often reviewing their priorities and their deemed assessment of risk. Finance executives should expect to hear more from their audit committee members and more frequently. They need to answer more programming, more probing, and more detailed questions. So tune in to CFO Magazine to research a little bit more of that. Well, today our guest is Deborah Merrill. Deb, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Lorraine, and it's great to be here.
Well, Deb, I'm very excited. You are our first female CFO, and for all of those other female CFOs out there, please give us a call. We want more of you. Being a woman CEO, I certainly want to make sure that we are focusing on those women that have achieved the CFO title. Well, Deb, you're a vice president, chief financial officer, and treasurer at Delta Apparel, an international apparel marketing, design, and manufacturing company. Your products include branded apparel and headwear, and you've been with Delta Apparel for over 12 years in various finance roles. Before joining the company, you were the logistics controller for GNB Technologies, and then previous to that, an auditor for Deloitte & Touche. Let's start by kicking off some questions about your earlier background. Deb, first tell us, what is your background? Why did you begin a career with one of the big accounting firms? And do you think that gave you very specific experience in a particular avenue?
Sure. And beginning my career with what was then one of the big six firms was probably one of the smartest choices I made. You know, in the accounting world, I would equate going out in public accounting in one of the big firms as kind of like a boot camp. It's a good training ground in so many different aspects. You know, you do get to see the different companies and tackle different accounting areas and different functions. But I think the experiences you gain from working in public accounting are actually much bigger and broader than just the core accounting and auditing experience that you get. It's more the exposure to the business and operations. You know, it's the experience, the management experience you get as you quickly develop your organizational time management and communication skills. You kind of get a different perspective of different industries and different businesses that are all within the same industry and get to see the way different people tackle different problems.
You know, and also I found in very similar timing to yourself that I had access at a very junior level of my career to an executive level. You were certainly reviewing audit points with your partners. You were learning from a team of much senior, much more experienced people than yourself, but you quickly grew through the ranks, is my understanding.
You're absolutely correct. You know, you just get the opportunity to gain those responsibilities much earlier in your career than you ever do. And I think that, you know, also hones in on your communication skills to be able to talk about things that you obviously, you know less about their business than the people you're talking to, but have to carry on conversations, ask questions, learn more yourself and bring up any points and suggestions you have for their business. So you know, it's quite a load on your shoulders when you're first, you know, starting your career out there. But it certainly, you know, throws you into it, but certainly gives you those opportunities to grow quickly and hone those skills, which I think are the skills that are most important as you advance your career.
Interesting, Deb. Communications kind of prepares you to be on CFO Radio, huh?
Exactly.
Well, were there any specific lessons that you learned as an auditor, perhaps looking at the forensic element of detail and review and preparation and sign-off, the process of an auditor, the risk assessment? Talk to us about that.
Sure. I think there absolutely is. I think it gives you a perspective of being able to take a look at things. You know, when you first start out your career, you usually do things from the bottom-up approach. But when you've been an auditor and you get to do it from a top-down approach and look at the big picture and the big financials first and then start digging into those risk areas, and I think it hones your skills in what to look at so that as you do get to the CFO level, you know, you don't have to start and know all the details of everything. You have the ability to look and understand where the risks are, where it's important to focus, what looks right, what doesn't look right. And I think those are skills that you gain having been through that role.
Now, let's do a little bit of deep dive on that, if we can, Deb. Don't want you to mention any company names or anything like that, but things that went right, things that didn't go right. Do you have any particular examples of maybe management style or leadership elements that you saw that you learned from along that path?
You know, I would say absolutely. You know, one of the lessons that you do learn as well is, you know, accounting isn't quite as black and white as some might think or some of us might wish it was in certain instances. But there are, you know, a lot of different ways that people look at it and a lot of different ways that it's still correct. It's just which angle you take on it. I think, you know, looking back in that and looking back at the CFOs that then I was talking to and executives within these companies, and I think, you know, one of the things that you see is so much, you hear so much today about that tone at the top, and it really does play a difference when you're in these companies and you're looking at their records and the way that they do their accounting and whatnot. That tone at the top, whether that's, you know, the goals that are set forth, whether that's the what's acceptable and what's not, the more conservative approach, the more aggressive approach, more risk-taking, less risk-taking, that tone at the top certainly plays its way all the way down to the staff accounting group. And, you know, those can be positive aspects, but those can also be negative. And I think that's a takeaway for, you know, now sitting in my role and realizing the tone that I set in the organization, it does get through those ranks, and you've got to make sure that tone is an appropriate tone that you want the people to be working under.
That's very important, I think, Deb. One of the elements that I have heard in the last year or two in terms of CEOs and now CFOs that are looking to hone their communication skills, not only as a leader, but as a presenter to analysts, a presenter to shareholders and employee base at large, they're actually enrolling in comedy school. And because of the fact that, you know, if you can take the raw eggs that are being thrown at you from the audience when you're giving a bad line, you can pretty much defend yourself in terms of what might be a heated discussion. And sometimes that can be an awkward message that you have to give.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk a little bit more, if we can, about Delta Apparel. As I prepared for the show and your background and history, I reviewed a fair bit of Delta Apparel's history. One of the most notable elements is a very significant focus on acquisition. My gosh, 7 acquisitions completed in the last about 6 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, had you had any experience of due diligence from the audit side in your earlier years of career?
You know, when I was in audit, I did not do the due diligence side, but I will say that overall, you know, all due diligence really is going in and, you know, doing all the things you did in just auditing companies.
Mm.
So, you know, certainly there is a great transition right there of having done that as an auditor and now coming in and looking at it in the same manner. That's you're trying to get to the same answer.
Mm.
And so I think it's certainly equates, fairly easily to those experiences.
Yeah, yeah. And I can see that would be a very strong parallel. Well, as we look at Delta Apparel's history, I'm going to do a quick rundown and bear with me if I get either the pronunciation or not quite right.
Sure.
The Cotton Exchange, Art Gun, To The Game, Fun Tees, Intensity Athletics, I love this one, Junk Food Clothing, and MJ
Sophie.
Tell us a little bit, if you can, again, not wanting to share anything that isn't public information, but tell me a little bit about the acquisitions. And did you pick a company specifically because it was going to be highly acquisitive? There's a lot of fun and speed in moving through a company that's in that manner.
Sure. And you're exactly right. We have certainly done 7 acquisitions in 7 years, and the most recent 3 To The Game, Art Gun, and Cotton Exchange, those 3 were done in the course of 15 months. So, we've been a little bit busy here. I think, going back, I wish I could say that I looked for that in beginning my career at Delta Apparel. I can honestly say I didn't. I think more so it was looking for a company that I'd never get bored. And, mm-hmm. Coming from a public accounting background where you do something different and you're at different businesses and everything is always changing and you get to learn new things and never get bored, that's what was really important to me. And I think you can gain that in a lot of different aspects within companies. But for me, being at Delta Apparel and, being on the front end of all of these acquisitions and growth that we've been able to achieve over the last 10 years, certainly I can say I've not been bored.
No, absolutely. Well, take us through some of the key steps in you getting ready for an acquisition, you meaning the acquirer.
Okay, sure. It's an interesting thing to think about getting ready for an acquisition. And, there's a couple, in simple terms, there's certainly a whole list of things that you got to do. But, certainly the first thing is finding that right acquisition and coming to what I kind of term a handshake deal about how we're going to get the deal done. Then the next aspect is more of the due diligence and all of the legal agreements and financing agreements to make that happen. And then the real fun begins once you get the deal closed and you start integrating it to make sure that integration is successful, not only for the financial aspect of the business but also the culture of the business. Kind of taking a few of those points and highlighting a few of the things that I've certainly learned over these 7 acquisitions is that finding the right acquisition and getting to that big picture deal is in some ways the hardest aspect. There's so many things to consider, the pros and the cons for your business, the risks associated with taking the step of the acquisition, the competitive aspects of it, how much are you going to pay for it, and so on and so on. And, one thing that I always look at in acquisitions is that both sides have to bring something to the table so that the whole is bigger than the individual companies were before they were put together. And, most people look at acquisitions and say, what's the company that I'm going to acquire? What's that going to bring to me? That's pretty obvious, but to me, it's also important that as the acquirer, you're bringing something that's going to make the business that you're acquiring better, that you're not just putting two pieces together and you get the sum of those two pieces, but that you get more. Those things that you can bring to the table are leadership and management. It could be capital to support stronger or faster growth for the company you're acquiring. It could be business and information systems. There's many things that the acquiring company can bring. But to have a successful acquisition, I think you got to make sure that you are bringing something to the table that's going to make that business better. Once you find that acquisition, I think one of the challenges is never falling in love with it until the deal's done. I think that's one of the aspects that you can get in trouble with if you don't keep that level head and remember the key points of what's making it a strategically good fit for your business. If you fall in love with it, then you're going to start in these negotiations and you're going to get off track and you're going to get to the point where, you know, the prize is just getting the deal done. And that's really not the prize. The prize is getting a strategic deal done that works for the business and is going to make it better.
So how as a financial leader, do you help that process? Is it a lot of in-depth communication, leadership meetings? I mean, you're bringing two companies together at the functional level. Essentially, you're now bringing two departments together, or perhaps for you, seven different departments all have to now shake hands in a manner that they didn't shake before, use systems that they didn't use before. Perhaps they weren't publicly held previously, and now they're having to comply with timelines.
That is all exactly the fun that begins once the deal is done. You have certainly hit on it. And I think the important part is that as you head in before the deal even gets done, that's the part of the due diligence that, to me, you've got just the financial understanding of what's in their numbers and what's in their projections and how is that all going to work. That's one aspect, but the bigger aspect to me is getting an understanding of the culture and the culture within the finance department and, you know, what, you know, the way that the thinking is there. You know, do they close the books every month? Do they close the books once a quarter? Do they close the books once a year? What kind of timeline? What's the skill sets that are in that finance department? And those are the things that while you're going through the process, and, you know, it's a courtship between two businesses when you're looking at acquiring a company.
You're almost learning to tango together, huh?
You absolutely are. And those are the things if you can't view it as it's not just a financial transaction and it's not just a business transaction. You got to go into it with both sides. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to meet on common ground on both sides of that for it to be successful.
And obviously,
sometimes you find you can't tango right together, and you have to decide that it's either not the right fit or not the right time for the right fit. And you got to walk away. Other times, you know, it just becomes natural, and you know this is going to be good for both parties.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that you bring a lot of cultural elements to your due diligence, as well as the financial, the business, the operations, the legal, the human resources. Perhaps talk to us in terms of that due diligence process. My experience is that there's always a balance of you need to learn, you need to have that acquiring or that company that's being acquired allow you to open the doors, but you've got a shroud of confidentiality around you. You've got a shroud of only being able to speak with selected people that basically have agreed to that level of confidentiality. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. And I think we've seen through the acquisitions that we've done, you know, differences on, you know, in that aspect alone, you know, it is kind of interesting that, you know, we've acquired private companies, and so they don't have always the same risk that we do of being the acquiring company of people knowing it's us that's looking at the business. And so that's kind of an interesting aspect you don't think about a lot. So sometimes they'll allow you to talk to anybody, but it's more on our side of wanting to keep things quiet until, you know, you get to a point just from that confidentiality standpoint. But I do think, you know, you hit on it as far as the financial part of the due diligence is really just one of many parts of it. And to me, we take that opportunity while you're doing some of those core things you have to do to also start understanding the business, understanding the people, understanding that culture, and also building, you know, starting to build those relationships. I mean, at the end of the day, you can go in there, you know, hardcore, black and white, and with a wrong kind of tone, and yeah, then at the end of the day, you might get the acquisition done, but there's just a negative connotation and feeling amongst, you know, it's a we and a they kind of aspect, and we try to go into it saying, okay, well, this is going to be the partner that I'm with, and we want to start building those relationships on the right tone to start with. Mm-hmm. So it's more of a, you know, teach me about what you know and I don't know, and getting a relationship built with the people. You know, it also, when you build those relationships, it's amazing the things that you can find out, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it's much easier to find those things after you start building the relationships and you're not an outsider, you know, with the microscope looking at the company.
Yeah, and one of the readings that often comes out after the fact, and it typically isn't a month after the fact, it might be 3, 5, 10 years after the fact, but those folks that have been in companies that have been highly acquisitive or in that M&A arena, one of our earlier guests about 2 months ago on the show was a heavy M&A background, and he also talked about the fact that one of the reasons that M&A deals don't tend to come to fruition with the dollars and the expected savings and the combined collective, two heads are better than one, or two companies have more combined capabilities than one plus one, is that very often the cultural fit wasn't quite right and the people can't seem to come together in the same way.
That is absolutely one of those things, and luckily we've had, you know, we've made good choices in those cultures, but I'll tell you, everyone that you go through, you learn something else to put on your checklist, to investigate, to ask a question about, because it is amazing that sometimes you think that people, you know, you might think that people, because that company's sitting in your backyard, you know, for us, maybe it's a, you know, a Southeast-based company versus, you know, our junk food clothing is out in Los Angeles, and you think, okay, well, those companies that are, you know, we're all Southeastern companies, we're going to all think alike and have that versus an LA-based company. But when it comes down to business, that's not always the case, and how you think about making money and how you think about running and operating your business, just because you're in the same geographic area or you're in the same, you know, type business doesn't mean you think about those things in the same manner. Mm-hmm. And those are those things that sometimes surprise you.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about the financial due diligence process. Is it a case of going down the P&L, going down the balance sheet, making sure that cutoff is correct, making sure that the revenue recognition, all the other accounting policies, leases are accounted for correctly, fixed assets, you know, that equity is there? Is it more of a value-based look, or is it more of a historic cost look? Or talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. We look at it more from two aspects. One is, you know, so often a purchase price is going to be based on the assets that you're acquiring and those hard assets that you're acquiring. And so you want to make sure that those are valued appropriately. You know, it is interesting. We do go in there and essentially kind of close the books the way that we would close the books under the accounting, you know, process that we go through. And so if you're going to look at apples to apples, how's this business going to look when we do the accounting, you know, the way that we do and the reserves that we put on things and different things like that. And we reset those on their business. You know, that sometimes is harder or easier depending on the business and depending on the steps they go through. Again, we have been acquiring private companies, and so, you know, decisions are made for different reasons with a private company versus a public company. And so, you know, a lot of times there's, you know, new things that you're almost teaching the company you're acquiring in how to look at things and the perspective to take on things. And so we do go through and look at all of that, because for us, a couple things come out of that. You make sure that you do know the valuation of what the assets that you are acquiring are going to be. But what comes out of those adjustments are changes to the actual historical P&Ls. And, you know, you can take a business that may have looked for the last 2 years or 3 years like it's been doing, you know, well or at a certain level, but when you go and take a look at the reserves that may be needed on their receivables or their inventory, then you can quickly realize, well, their profitability really wasn't what it was when you take into consideration that they didn't have appropriate reserves on their inventory or whatnot. So it does change then the performance of the business, which obviously plays into, you know, your estimation and your forecasts about what the business is going to be able to do in the upcoming months.
Mm-hmm.
So we take that kind of asset approach, and you learn a lot from that, and then that helps, and the knowledge you gain there helps put together realistic expectations about what's going to happen with that business in the future. Because, you know, that's the critical aspect of whether the acquisition is going to be successful or not, whether it will be accretive to your earnings or not, is are you going to be able to achieve and do you have realistic expectations about what's going to happen in the first, in the second, and the third year? You know, it is very easy to think, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to have this synergy and we're going to have this cost savings. But putting a realistic aspect on that and realizing things don't happen overnight, things don't get integrated overnight, and there's costs associated with any of those time delays, you've got to get a real handle on the business and historical to be able to put into perspective what the future can hold with the acquisition.
Understand. So looking back at those acquisitions that you have gone through, what would be your lesson, perhaps number one lesson for the CFO, maybe of that next company that is about to be acquired, whether by you or by someone else? What is it that they should prepare themselves for?
Well, you know, I'm going to answer it, but do keep in mind that I've never been on the other side. And so I've kind of got a one-sided perspective on it. But I think the big lesson, at least from all the acquisitions we've done, is we need the management and the leadership of the businesses we're acquiring. You know, and I believe that's most often the case. You know, most companies don't have extra personnel sitting around to take on the work that's going to be involved in now owning another business. And, you know, the human capital is an important asset that gets acquired in a business, and we certainly want to keep that. So, you know, my lesson is this is the time for the CFO to, you know, to show the skills that they have, to show the management that they have, to show, you know, all the positives that they can offer as a leader of that business. Because when we acquire that business, that's what we want to keep. And I just encourage them to take the viewpoint as a positive viewpoint, to learn. You know, they can learn new things, especially if they're a private company going to a public company. They can grow. They can make new relationships and just show the acquiring company the skills and the leadership qualities that you have to offer that new business. You know, talent's something that is very hard to find, and I think everybody needs to show the acquiring company the talent you have, because the acquiring company is going to want it.
Mm.
And if you go in with a positive aspect and, you know, to be able to show and be a part of the team to make the acquisition happen and show that talent, the acquiring company is going to want to keep that leadership talent.
Understand. And a business is its employees. The sum of a business is the sum of the intellect, the capital, nature of people doing what they do, the processes, and doing the right thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's take a slightly broader aspect. Obviously, the companies that you have acquired, one of the elements in that you're a publicly traded company is that they now need to become compliant with regulation reporting. Sarbanes-Oxley is part of the acquisition. What are the key challenges today for a public company CFO? Is it the regulatory reporting? Is it something else?
I would say that it's what has to be done at those business levels to be a part of a public company. And it's probably the biggest challenge on the existing personnel at the acquired business. Like I was mentioning before, you know, a lot of these companies, either close the books monthly, but it might have taken them a month to close them, or, you know, different things like that, or, you know, not consistently, or cutoff didn't matter, and all of those things that do matter. And so there's a lot of things that change in their world to become a part of a public company world. The probably the biggest thing is the short time frame to close the books, and, you know, be able to meet the deadlines and learn how to do that. We found, though, that most of the accounting and finance teams do take that challenge well, and actually some cases they like that discipline to be a public company and, you know, to get that done, and it becomes a new challenge for them, and we found that most take that and take that positively. Regarding SOX, the thing I can say, the most is thank goodness that you get the first year carve out for compliance, because it doesn't happen overnight. And a lot of the SOX stuff is getting that ingrained in the culture. And, you know, I know we keep going back to the culture, but it's so critically important, because getting internal controls to be just part of what is done, and, you know, to where you don't have to think about it, it's just how you do things. That takes time to get ingrained in a culture, and especially in a culture that hasn't had that before. And so that's the thing that we take a lot of time, try to make it positive. There's a lot of aspects of SOX that I think are very good for business. And if you take it for what it was meant to be, having those controls and having that be part of the culture, makes you sleep better at night. And so we take a lot of time to make sure that it's not just a you have to do this, or it's not you have to do this because, you know, it's a regulatory requirement, but more so you have to do this because it's good for your business. And here's how it can help your business.
Absolutely. And the coordination that is involved in a SOX environment for companies that need to become compliant is looking at the broader aspects of the business. As you said earlier, top-down and bottom-up, it's a broad scale of bringing both aspects of the financials together.
You're exactly right. And the discipline of doing that, because you can't do it 90% of the time, and I forgot to do it this month. It's the discipline of making that, you know, every day, every week, every month, every quarter, whatever that may be, and sticking with that discipline.
Understand. Well, talking of discipline, and staying on the topic of acquisitions, there's a discipline that you as an acquirer of companies need to have in terms of making sure that the numbers add up. You have talked about the purchase price and the valuation of assets that you are acquiring, and obviously the reserves and the liabilities, contingencies, and so forth that offset against that value. Talk to us about today's climate, the tightness of capital markets. They're still pretty tight out there. How do companies, broadly speaking, today look to fund those acquisitions? And again, let's make sure that we're going away a little bit so that you're not disclosing anything about your company information.
Sure. I'd say you're exactly right that financing an acquisition now and a year ago was certainly much harder than it was 3 or 4 years ago. You got to take a look at a couple of things, and certainly it depends on what type of acquisition a company's doing. It's certainly easier to finance a business that you're acquiring more of the hard assets versus, your inventory and PP&E and AR versus acquiring a company that instead you're really buying a brand equity or other intangible assets. And that's where, things have changed dramatically in the last couple years. I can say overall, I think the financing is still out there, and it's still out there for businesses that, have a good balance sheet, have good earnings and whatnot. You can get things financed. Luckily for us, we have a proven track record with successfully completing and implementing acquisitions. And so our banking partners are comfortable in giving us the financing to acquire new businesses. I think, if it's the first acquisition you're doing as a company, I think there might be more skepticism as to is it really going to turn out the way you think it's going to turn out. The different aspects we always have to look at, we've always done our acquisitions just with, the same financing that we have our capital structure. But I think you've always got to take a look at for what acquisition you're doing, what the best approach to that is. If you're a public company, is that issuing more stock? Is that, keeping with an ABL deal that you have or, going out and issuing public debt? Different aspects like that, may work better depending on where your company is, in its process and whatnot, how large you are, how small you are. There's so many aspects to look at. But I think overall, if you're a solid company and, can find that acquisition that's going to help your business, there are ways to finance it. It's certainly going to be a little more expensive now than it was a few years ago in some aspects. But, it is out there, and you just have to knock on the doors and, show that you know what you're doing, show that you've got a good business plan for the acquisition, and, it's out there.
Well, that being said, so now you've got it financed, you've done your due diligence, you've made the acquisition, we've talked about culture. What impact have all of the elements of what we've been talking about had for you, not only on your finance function workload, but the workload of those that you are acquiring? You've got to focus on monthly, you've got to focus on quarterly and annual reporting, and what it sounds like in between it, you've done three acquisitions in 15 months. How do you manage the workload of all that? Do you go to outside services that potentially can help you manage that increase in workload?
I think the biggest thing is just making sure you've got a great team around you. And that team is, for me, both a finance team, but when you acquire companies, it's obviously so much more. It's the finance and other aspects. So it's really just having a good management team and personnel team in all the different aspects, because you've got to lean on each other. I think your comments you made about, people starting to go to communication classes on humor, I think that can help during these times. They do get stressful, and there's a lot of workload both on your team at your company and the team of the company you just acquired. And you've got to head into it with the right attitude. You've got to laugh about things. You've got to make sure that you don't overwhelm people. And understand that there's only so much time in the day to get things done. Prioritize the most important aspects. Don't get caught up in something so small that you spend time and it's not worth the time that's spent. But also make sure you don't overlook the things that do become important or that are the risk. And so I think we're all back to that risk-based understanding that goes back to in my career, starting my career in public accounting, and keeping that in mind, and just keeping in mind, a good positive attitude, and if everybody works together, you're going to get it done. Sometimes you might not think you're going to get it done, but, you always find a way to get it done, and then you've got to breathe a sigh of relief and look at what's to come next, and manage that and manage towards, you know, what the future, what tomorrow, what the next day is going to bring.
So in terms of talking about tomorrow and the future, what are the hardest elements of actually integrating that newly acquired company? We've talked a lot about the culture. Let's now talk a little bit, if we can, about the process and the systems. Do you have an approach of using a consolidation package, or do you have them come onto your systems? Do you have them look at your process? Now, obviously, they are following your timeline.
Sure. And that's something you're hitting on that we have just really been focusing in the last, year to two on. We originally took approach most of our acquisitions of acquiring the businesses, but letting them continue to run, under their business. And what that involved was most of them stayed on their accounting system and their ERP system, and then we just have a consolidation management tool that rolls it all up together. What we've been taking a look at now that we've completed seven and we're on, various and sundry systems, we started about 2 years looking at, okay, now we know a lot more about different systems and trying to find a system that, or narrowing down the systems that certain businesses can run off of and trying to consolidate those systems, and both the true IT systems and then also those processes, because you realize if you continue to do things seven and eight different ways, now when we acquire more and more, it gets to be too big and broad and you can't manage that appropriately. So we started a couple years ago to find some of the systems that we know, it might not be the day we acquire them, but shortly thereafter, these are the systems that we're going to get you and get you integrated on so that you get the benefit of, the cost benefit of the actual system, the cost benefit of the time it takes to manage an IT system and the IT support staff you have to have, as well as the benefits of being able to, cross-utilize locations, cross-utilize distribution centers, people, all of those aspects. And so, I think that it ultimately is important. It may not be important if you're just going to acquire one company and you kind of have two, but as you start getting bigger and bigger, having those processes and systems that are similar on the same systems are critically important.
Well, Deb, I would like to thank you very much for being a guest on our show. As we wrap up, I think that you have shown us a very broad and deep insight to acquisitions, lots of acquisitions, and you probably are looking for the horizon in that future time where you might get a month without an acquisition being talked about. I hope you do, just for your own sanity, but obviously the company's growing, there's a lot of fun. But I've got one question for you. We have a tradition on our show to ask all our guests, what is your CFO tip of the month? What's yours?
Okay. I'd say my tip is to always be thinking about tomorrow. Today it seems like everyone is very focused on the here and now and what needs to be done to get through the tough times. And while I, agree that that is important, I think people sometimes forget to look out into the future and prepare for it also. You can't be so afraid of today that you don't look at the positives that can come tomorrow and, start working on them now. And so my tip is just to always be looking at tomorrow and what positives can come and what you can do to bring those positives tomorrow, and be working on those today.
And maybe another acquisition, huh?
Exactly.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah Merrill, our guest today, for sharing her innermost thoughts on the role of the CFO. And thank you also to our contributor, CFO Magazine, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and fast-growing businesses. For more information, please go to www.delaneyconsulting.com. www.delaneyllc.com. And thanks also to SAP Business by Design, the software as a service business management solution for small to medium-sized companies. For more information on that product, please go to www.sap.com. This and other thought leadership about today and tomorrow's CFO is available right from your computer at www.cforadio.com. Thank you for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off until next time.